HBCU, Cloudy Nation, Purple and Gold family, stand to your feet, put your crossbones up, and lean side to side, yeah, and lean side to side, yeah, and lean side to side, come on, yeah, 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 welcome to the island, man, it's crazy in here, a whole sea of purple and gold waving in here.
Welcome into the Pirate Preview right here on the Sports Objective. Very excited as we have the Temple Owls coming in from Philly to Greenville on Saturday at 3 o'clock. And with us right now, Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, dude?
Just leaving the Y. Riley had practice earlier tonight here and got a little workout in. Now headed home and looking forward to talking some Pirate football.
Riley has, by the way, if you didn't know, his son has baseball practice 365 days a year. If you're wondering why his team is still good.
Actually, Dave, this baseball season just ended. Right, he's not currently playing travel ball, so his fall baseball ended. He's trying something new. He's actually doing indoor soccer, something I never played soccer in my life, but basketball doesn't start until late December. So for the next month and a half, he's going to get in shape playing indoor soccer.
Hey, that's great. That's great. I totally encourage anybody that's watching this right now. You can ask the experts. These people that focus on just one sport and one sport only, huge mistake. And those of us that are from a 1A school, our kids are going to have to play every single sport. So play multi-sports. How are you, Matt Semenza? What's up, dude?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Good to see you. I'm pretty fired up for the game this weekend. Really looking forward to it. Two teams with a lot to play for still. Two teams still in bowl contention, technically, when you look at it. So I expect a tough game and just hoping the Pirate fans turn out and we can pack the stadium and the team performs well.
I'm just hoping Matt Semenza will come down and be in my seats, but that's a whole other show, as they say. From Connecticut, that would be great. Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, we're glad to have one of our good friends back on the show.
Absolutely. Whenever the Pirates are playing Temple, this guy's a regular. Welcome back in from Al's Daily, Ryan Wall. And Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you? Good to be back. Always a pleasure. And like you, I'm ready to talk some football this weekend.
All right. I was thinking we could talk some barbecue, some wrestling, horror movies. But we definitely have a football game to talk to. We can get to that later on in life in general. But Ryan, I know Matt sent us a group text today. He was talking about being excited for this preview. We're very excited about this game. We love this. You know, I do think it's kind of a rivalry in the sense of, Matt, you remember, and Bubba, that we've been playing Temple for a long time, going back to the 90s. I definitely remember. And so we love when Temple's on the schedule because it's one of those things where even if you guys were not in our conference, it's still like one of those games we've been playing since the days of being independent.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And, you know, since these two teams have joined the American, you know, there's been some back and forth. And, you know, Temple had owned the early meetings against the Pirates. And now last year, obviously, the Pirates finally got one up on the Owls and beat them down on their home field. And I assume they're going to be looking to continue that this weekend with another battered Owls team coming to Greenville, coming off of three really tough losses. But, you know, I think that, like you said, this sort of is a rivalry game in the sense of the geographic component of the conference because, you know, other than Navy, ECU is the next closest school to Temple. And even so, you know, back in the days when Temple was playing UConn, you know, the last week of the season, it was always that wasn't a rivalry because UConn was as bad as they are and continue to still be. It was more looking forward to the Pirates. And I just remember, you know, that 2014 game when ECU came into Philly and Temple knocked them off as a ranked team. And that was really, you know, what I perceive as the moment that really started the turnaround of the Temple program under Matt Rhule. And, you know, that really just took off after that. And now since, obviously, it seems to be kind of the script has flipped a little bit, and now it's ECU's turn.
Hey, Ryan, it's funny you mentioned that 2014 game. That is a painful memory for me. I was there that day. Maybe the coldest weather game I've ever been to in my life. It was pouring freezing rain, And for the Pirate fans that were there, it was a miserable experience. I think we fumbled six times and lost. We lost six of them. Conversely, Temple fumbled, I want to say, four or five times and didn't lose any of them. So we got crushed on the turnover game. And that was just a miserable day. And I agree with you, Ryan. That sort of sparked Temple for the next few years. And that was our decline at East Carolina from that point on. So definitely a turning point moment for both programs.
We were ranked, I think, guys, Bubba helped me and Matt, I think we were ranked like 14th or 16th, depending on which poll. I mean, we were way up there in the rankings. In fact, it's funny you guys mentioned that. If you guys remember, the college football rankings had come out a week or two before, and we were right there in the middle of the top 25. And we haven't, that's a great point, Matt. I was going to say that you beat me to steal my thunder, but we literally, no, seriously, you're spot on, Matt. That literally, and Ryan, that was the, I guess for modern times, that was a watermark for our program in modern history. As far as like in the recent times, and you look at now, we're fighting our way back. And Ryan, I mentioned you guys in the green room right before the show started. I know the power rankings this week that came out, they have the Pirates at number five. So we were literally under the Montgomery area, 10th or 11th or 12th. We were at the bottom of the barrel, so to speak. And now it looks like we're in the middle of the pack, so to speak. Like there's still a month left of the season. Anything can happen. You know, people were saying, I said, well, sure, mathematically we could go 4-8, but we also could go 8-4. You know, we could go 6-6, 7. There's multiple scenarios. Same thing for Ryan and Matt brought this up too, that I've been wanting to talk about. You guys have a chance still to play for a bowl. You have a lot to play for, and so does the Pirates. So what's the mood in Philly like right now with the fans? What are they, the Temple fans? Are they feeling optimistic you guys are going to a bowl, or what's the sentiments there with you guys?
Well, mathematically, they are still alive. If you would have asked me this question a month ago after that win against Memphis, I would have said, heck yeah, Temple's going to a bowl game. That was the big win of the season. And, that was a game that nobody had penned Temple to win. That was a game where Memphis was expected to come in and cruise. But unfortunately, after that, it's just been an abysmal play from the Owls on both sides of the ball. And I expected it against Cincinnati a month ago, but I didn't expect it when the Owls traveled to Tampa against USF. And even last week with UCF being in the situation they are with, Dylan Gabriel being out still with that broken collarbone, I expected it to be a little bit more of a competitive game with UCF, and it just did not end up being that way. And it's been for a variety of reasons that they just have not been in these games. And you can't really just pinpoint one thing. It's been a lot of things. It's been their own mistakes. It's been poor offensive play, poor defensive play, poor tackling, turnovers at key situations, not being able to establish the run, injuries. It's been a whole list of things that we can get into leading up to this game and previewing this game this weekend with ECU. But fans' perspective, I think they're at the point where, the world is falling. The Owls look like they could be heading for their second straight losing season, and that hasn't happened for the Owls in almost 9 years. So they're a little worried at that. And I can understand why, because, Matt Rhule built that culture that it was expected to win. Jeff Collins continued that culture. They were expected to win. And now Rod Carey in his third year, this could be, back-to-back losing seasons with a possibility of only 4 wins in 2 years. And that's not what the Owl fans are hoping for, obviously. But I'm more obviously realistic that there are still winnable games when you look at this slate. I mean, I think ECU, they have a potential to win if things click right, because I think this team has some weaknesses that Temple could exploit. Not saying they're going to, but there's a chance. Then they get Houston, which Houston up until last week I wasn't sold on. So I think that there could be a chance there, depending on how things go. They have to travel to Philly. And then you get Tulsa and Navy to close, and both those teams look to be beatable. So statistically speaking, there's a chance. I think that even maybe this year, 5-7 could get a bowl game, considering the numbers right now. As far as bowl eligible teams, it looks like 5-7 could, for those teams high in the APR, which the Owls are positioned well in, they could go to a bowl game even at 5-7.
I wanted to ask that very thing. I have one follow-up, Matt. And Matt, you can chime in because you're in the Northeast too. Maybe you're hearing stuff. But what's the – as far as the fans go with Kerry, do they want him gone? Is he on – is there like is there a hot seat? Is it burning? Is it like starting to burn? Or I don't want him – I'm not saying that I think he should be fired. I'm just wondering what the fans in Philly with Temple are thinking.
Oh, if it was up to the fans, he would have been fired 3 weeks ago. They've been all over him, and in the last 2 weeks in particular have not helped his cause any. I think after the Memphis game, like I mentioned, that took a little bit of the fire off of his seat. You know, I think fans were like, well, maybe last year just was a fluke, and it really was just all the COVID issues, the practice restraints and all. But, you know, now that – three straight blowout losses in which the Owls just haven't been competitive in at all. You know, the fans are back to this guy's not the guy. This guy's not the coach that we thought he was. He's possibly just a MAC level coach. And this is not me saying that. This is what fans are saying. I think Kerry is a very good football coach. I think there's some things that there should be improved, obviously. And I don't think many people would argue with me with that, considering they've been outscored 135-24 the last four or three games. So I think that what he needs right now, especially considering that Temple just hired its new AD and he started this week, is that Kerry needs to put forth a good audition now for the last 4 weeks of the season in the hopes of maybe saving his job, because, you know, there always is that chance with a new AD comes a coaching change because, you know, he wants his guy in there. So that's always a possibility right now. But, you know, like I've said, I believe on the show before, you know, I think you give him a pass last year considering, but this year is just not off to a good start, especially since these are most of his guys that he has recruited and they're just not performing up to American Conference standards.
Yeah. And Ryan, you know, Philly is a great city. Great at so many different things, but they are not known for their patience as it relates to football. So I could see the seat getting very warm for Rod Kerry. Unfortunately, I agree. I think he's a very good football coach. You know, we were in a similar situation here earlier this year, heading into the Marshall game. You know, I think that was a game that if we had lost, I think the seat would have started to get pretty hot for Mike Houston. Unfortunately, which nobody wants, because we support Coach Houston, but we were able to pull that game out with a huge fourth quarter rally, and our fortunes have sort of turned since that point. So we can certainly relate to that. Ryan, I wanted to ask you, like, you know, when I watched this Temple team on film, and I went back today and I watched the UCF game, they look very different to me than they have in years past. A lot of five wide receivers. Sets. I, you know, when I think of Temple, I think of more of a physical attacking, you know, downhill running game, big tight ends. This team looks very different. It's spread out. Like I said, five wides, you know, a little more of a quarterback that you know, the short check down type throws that I see. Is this by design or is this due to the, you know, rash of injuries that the program has faced?
I would say that this has been more of a design thing. You know, coming into the year, I think that Rod and his staff knew what they had as far as the playmakers that were there, especially in the wide receiver core. You know, their wide receiver room is very deep, having guys like Randall Jones, Jose Barbone, and Jaden Blue. But you have to take into account that you had a redshirt freshman quarterback transfer new to the program coming in. Who played very limitedly at Georgia due to circumstances there. And he also had a brain tumor at one point. So I think you want to try and protect him from, you know, and he had suffered several injuries at Georgia while he was there, I believe as during his true freshman year as well. So, you know, you want to try and get the ball out of his hands really quick. And, you know, it looked as though in that first game against Rutgers that the Owls might have had an injury to him on the first series of the game, and he did end up getting injured. He got stepped on, his ankle got stepped on, and he ended up going out of the game in that late in the third quarter there. And, you know, we were worried already. It was just like, oh, well, now the backup's a true freshman playing his first college action. We're going to have to, you know, just hope for the best. And, you know, but luckily Mathis has come back, and he's bounced back, you know, to mixed success, I would say, is a fair way to put it. But, you know, I think the main thing that you're pointing to as far as them being a spread out team, and, you know, instead of being that tough, physical, run down your throat type team that Matt Rhule and Jeff Collins sort of played with, even though Collins went more with a spread offense as well, you know, they were still they wanted to include the run in their offense. This year they just have not, and I'm not sure why that is. It was an issue coming into the season during the preseason. I think that we heard that there wasn't a running back who had separated himself yet, and that was a little bit confusing to us because they have an experienced guy in Tavon Rhule, who had led the team in rushing last year and played really well for the Owls, actually. And we wondered why, you know, all of a sudden he was not the feature back anymore. And, you know, he hasn't played a whole lot this season. He's played very sparingly, but the Owls just haven't had a lot of guys get carries, frankly, because of the blowouts in every game. And, you know, they just haven't had even a running back over 100 yards yet this year. And I think their leading rusher right now has 236 yards on the season. And I think that's just telling of how the running game has gone and how poor the offensive line has played. And that was a surprise to us throughout this season so far, considering they had five upperclassmen starting the year along the O-line. And I think I crunched the numbers at the beginning of the year, and they had 115 plus combined starts between the five of them. And wow, they just have not performed this year well. I'm not sure what's going on there. I don't know who's to blame for that, but I think that's part of the reason why Temple's offense has struggled. I don't think it's necessarily the design factor of it. It's just that it's been poor execution again along that whole side of the ball.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I was getting ready to talk about Temple Tough and ask you about the line play, and you answered that question, the offensive line not playing well. What about the defensive line? Because we always know that one of the football cliches is that games are won and lost, you know, at the trenches, you know, right there on the offensive defensive line. What about that whole adage of Temple Tough? Are you seeing that even maybe on the defensive line at all?
Well, let me go back one thing about the offensive line. I will say injuries along the O-line the last couple of weeks has played a little bit of a factor. I think last week they were down three of their starters by the second quarter in that game against UCF. So injuries definitely playing a factor there. Hopefully they're going to get some guys back this week, but I'm not sure. I guess we'll see. It's right now it's their right tackle, their right guard, and their left guard who are banged up right now. So not too good, especially when they're some of the more experienced guys there out of the group, and the more reliable ones out of the group. So but going to the defensive line now, you know, that's where Temple saw its mass exodus of players this offseason. You know, you think you lost guys like Ifeanyi Maije, who was a former all-conference player. You lost a guy like Arnold Ebiketie, who had a monster year last year for the Owls, and now he's tearing it up at Penn State. And you lost a guy like Chris Banks, who was a very solid backup defensive tackle in there behind Maije, and even got in playing with Maije by the end of last year, playing first string. You lose guys like that, and then you lose a guy like Dan Archibong to the NFL. You know, it's hard to replace that caliber of talent all at once. And Temple tried to go to the portal to get, you know, some players to fill that hole. But they just got injured, unfortunately, themselves during spring ball. And two of their transfers, both of them from North Carolina, Lancine Turay and Zach Gill, both have not played yet for the Owls. So unfortunately, they were down two right there. They did get a guy from Washington State, Will Rogers, who early in the year looked pretty solid. He was known for being a real pass rusher, sack guy at Washington State. But last week we noticed he wasn't on the sideline for Temple, and we asked Coach Carey about it after the game, and he just said, you know, he's not with the team, even though he practiced the week leading up to the UCF game. And then he said on Monday's presser that he didn't want to address the issue, and he hasn't decided Rogers' fate with the team yet. So I'm not sure what happened there. It sounds like it was an off the field issue, but we don't know if he's going to even be suiting up again for the Owls. They lost a guy to the transfer portal midseason in Nick Baggs, who had been the starting defensive tackle this year for the Owls. And now it looks like he could be on his way to Tampa to be playing for South Florida. He took an official there last week. So they're very thin right now along the D-line, and they're playing a lot of really young guys and guys that haven't had a lot of meaningful reps in games yet. And I think last week they were playing two redshirt freshmen or COVID freshmen as their starting D-ends, or one as a D-tackle, one as their D-end. And then you have an anchor in Manny Walker, who is a Wake Forest transfer from 2 years ago, who's probably been their best defensive end, but he's just been getting doubled a lot, and he hasn't really been able to make a whole lot of plays because of some of the other guys just not really getting that pass rush that they need at this level.
Yeah, you know, when you look at them on film again, you know, I heard our head coach Mike Houston comment earlier in the week in his presser that they run a unique style defense, and it really is. When you watch it, they use a three-man front, but they rarely walk down their outside linebacker on the edge. So it really is a true three-man front. It really looks to me almost like a 3-3-5, where they're just trying to keep everything in front of them. And I was thinking to myself, that might be the result of, you know, a lot of the injuries and transfers that they've had. So when you look at this team offensively and defensively, you do see some different things, you know, than we're used to seeing. So,
yeah, it was an interesting switch to the 3-3-5 from last year. You know, they had run the 4-3 in the past, and they had run pretty decent success with it. And the 3-3-5, when they first showed it, it actually didn't look as bad as what it has the last couple of weeks. You know, I thought against Rutgers, the defense actually played a heck of a game, considering they lost 61-14. Again, that was a circumstance of turnovers shooting themselves in the foot, and the defense having to defend a 20-yard field every time, you know, against the Scarlet Knights. But I thought they played pretty well in that game, and then it's just gone kind of downhill from there. And like you said, they've played that 3-3-5. I'm not sure if it's just to try and get a better player on the field or a more experienced player on the field in the secondary, you know, to have just another. You want to play your best players, obviously, and if that's not there, especially with the depth along the D-line, you might just want a guy that's going to be a nice bruiser in the backfield who's going to bring, you know, some impact to the game and kind of play a hybrid backer or safety position. But, you know, it's just kind of gotten worse, and then there's been times where they switched back to a four-man front, and that hasn't looked good when they did it. I know they had to do it against USF because they were getting manhandled on along the D-line, and that's why USF ran for 421 yards on them and held the ball for 45 minutes. They just couldn't tackle, and they couldn't stop the run, and it was a brutal game to be there in attendance for and to have to watch and cover, because it was just like, what's this team going to do if they can't tackle? And we knew what was coming next in UCF, obviously with having similar type backs to USF as far as Bowser and Richardson are concerned. You know, and we knew they were going to run the ball against the Owls because Dylan Gabriel's out, and they did. And they did well early, and it opened up the play action pass late in the game. And that's why Mikey Keene was able to have a career day and, you know, throw for 5 touchdowns against them last week.
No doubt. Bubba, are you trying to jump in there?
Dave, can you hear me all right? Or there you
go. Yeah, we're good now. Yeah, you're good now.
Okay. Ryan, I was looking over, you know, the box score from that Memphis win back a little over a month ago on October 2nd. And, you know, the Owls came back from down 17-0 at the link to win that game 34-31. You know, really pretty much from the looks of the box score, played quality football in all facets. 8 out of 18 on third down, nearly 500 yards of offense, didn't commit a turnover. And so what's changed over the last month as far as this Temple club is concerned?
Yeah, I think the Memphis game, it was a weird game in terms of it followed the pattern that the Owls have had all season, that they have not gotten off to good starts. I think the number right now is they've been outscored 67-7 in the first quarter of games this season. And obviously when you're playing from behind, the whole game mentality changes and your game plan kind of goes out the window or needs to be adjusted quickly if you're going to try and come back in that game. And they just made those adjustments really quickly, I think. You know, they went down 17-0, like you mentioned, and it looked like, oh, well, this is going to be another one of those blowout games like Rutgers and Boston College had been. But, you know, then they get a deep touchdown pass from Mathis to Jones, I believe it was. Or no, it was to Jaden Blue on a fourth down, close down to the end zone. Fourth and goal, Mathis flips it over the top of the Temple defense. Blue makes an insane one-handed catch along the sideline to get the Owls on the board. They got that offensive momentum rolling. Defense comes right out, gets a turnover, forces a fumble of, I believe it was Brandon Taylor. Did a really good job then to capitalize on that turnover on the short field, get another touchdown. And then they got a field goal just to tie it at the half or right before the half. And then, you know, in the second half, you know, they were able to play their ball. They saw some success running the ball. They shut down the Memphis rushing attack for the most part. And I think the biggest thing of that game was they kept Calvin Austin in check. And that's not something that a lot of teams have done this year, considering how good of a receiver he is. I think right now, if I saw earlier in the week, he has like 250 more receiving yards than any other player in the conference right now, which is just an insane number when you think about some of the guys in this conference and how they play and some of the offenses that the conference has. So it was quite the feat to say that they limited him, quote unquote, to 90 yards, I think around 90 yards he had in that game, or he might have even went over the 100-yard mark. And it was just a game where they did what they needed to do. They got a key turnover when they needed it. Late in that game, they got a goal line stand on a fourth down at the 1-yard line, and they forced, you know, a turnover there, and they just did what they needed to do. They executed, and that's something that they just haven't done, is execution.
Just after that result from afar, that it's probably thing, but then, you know, the results in the South Florida game down in Tampa and then UCF, those games being so lopsided, just really surprised me. And, you know, looking at it during that 3-game losing streak, I did notice that the Owls have had some problems holding on to the football, fumbling 5 times. So forgive me if you guys have already discussed that, but, you know, what were some of those circumstances?
Yeah, you're totally right. You know, in the Cincinnati game, it was 2 muffed punts that ended up, you know, really costing the Owls. Early in that game, you know, Jaden Blue, who had been their punt returner, very sure, solid receiver in his own right and had been a solid punt returner. I don't know what he was doing, but he just looked like he took his eyes off the ball and it squirted right through his hands. Cincinnati recovered, allowed them to score again, and I think that put them up 17-0 at that point. And then later in the game, Ahmad Anderson, they replaced him with Jaden Blue. He did the same thing. Looks like he took the eyes off the ball, fumbles, Cincinnati capitalizes. That's the dagger. But, you know, there have been some turnover issues here lately, especially against South Florida. They threw 2 picks, not really Mathis's fault on either one, I would say. Some people can argue that the first one was Mathis's fault, but I think it was just more so that the defender had good coverage. It hit off his backside and it just popped up in the air and another defender came in and caught it. And then there was a dropped pass by a tight end who really, really sealed the fate for the Owls, because, you know, once South Florida was getting the ball back, that they were just going to run it down their throats again, and the Owls couldn't stop them. So not sure what has been going on in terms of the fumbling issue. they say they practice it every week, and that's been Kerry's answer every week. You know, they obviously practice it. They do drills to prevent that. They've been trying to work on strength for these players of hanging on to the ball, and it just hasn't seemed to translate into games. And it's just, it's been frustrating, I think, for the team. And you see it building within the team. You see it building within Kerry and his staff that, you know, something's got to give at some point. And eventually one of these games, something's got to go Temple's way. But last week in particular, nothing went Temple's way in that UCF game. And you could tell early on that it was just going to be one of those days where it was going to get taken to the woodshed. And they did.
Yeah. And, you know, Ryan, when you look at this East Carolina defense, you know, when you look at us on film, the last 2 weeks in the second half of each game, we've pitched a shutout. Really against Houston, we really dominated that game with a lot of pressure off the edge. And then last week against a South Florida team, it was quite the opposite. We really didn't bring much pressure. We really, you know, played more of a base defense against a heavy rushing attack that they present, and had some success. So 2 weeks in a row, we've been able to pitch a shutout in the second half, which is not that is not a common theme for East Carolina over the last decade or so. What are your thoughts? You know, when you look at Temple, how do you think they'll try to attack this defense? And do you think it'll be, you know, a combination or more of a heavy passing attack?
Yeah, you know, I would like to say that it's going to be a nice balance, but unfortunately, I know how Temple's run game is, and I don't expect that to change throughout the year now, 8 games into the season, that they're going to magically find some success running the ball, especially with the possibility of 3 new starters along the O-line this week. I know that's where the Pirates seemingly tend to struggle a little more, is defending the run. They can be a little inconsistent there, but I think that you almost have to pass the ball against them. I know numbers wise that they technically actually have a worse pass defense than rush defense, but you have guys like McMillan and Fleming who are just insane right now. And I was looking at the numbers earlier, and the fact that McMillan has 13 passes defended and 4 picks, that's some NFL scout, you know, eyebrow raisers right there. And he's also the team's leading tackler. So that just makes it all the more worrisome that you're like, I don't know if I want to throw this guy's way. And with a young quarterback, and like you said, if they bring the pressure against Mathis, who tends to make some mistakes when pressure's on him, makes you a little worrisome there of how to attack this team. I think that early on you want to try to run the ball. I think you have to go there. You have to try it again and again and again and keep going to the well, especially if it's a tight game at halftime. You can't abandon it. And that's seemingly what Temple's had to do all season, is they just have to abandon it because they can't get out to a good start. And hopefully this week might be the week that they break out. But you've been saying that all year that, you know, that, yep, it's going to happen eventually. It's going to happen eventually, and it still is yet to happen. And like I said, 7 points in the first quarter of games all year, and even that touchdown came in week 2 against Akron. So it's been a long time since Temple's found the end zone in the first quarter. And if the Pirates get up 2 scores early, I mean, I think you'll see the same thing where they're going to just rely on the pass, and it might not end up well for the Owls.
Now, Ryan, earlier I know Dave asked about the defensive line in that game against South Florida, where the Bulls ran for a school record 421 yards or something to that effect. Were there any guys injured for Temple in that game? South Florida does have an excellent running game, but that number really, really shocked me.
Yeah, I believe that game Bags was out because he had just announced that he was transferring. So he did miss the game. So they were a little short at the nose tackle position. As far as the DNs, though, Rogers was still with the team at that point, though he played sparingly in that game. Again, they were playing some really young guys in there, like Darian Varner, who we believed at the beginning of the season to be a nose tackle. But then he played end, and then he switched back to nose tackle, and then he was back to end. And they sort of just play these guys along the D-line at whatever position, aside from, like, Jaquavion Mahoney, who who's the nose tackle. It seemed like all the other guys are sort of interchangeable and they can kind of play at every position. So I believe that Bags was the only one at the time who was out, other than the guys who had been injured in spring ball that I mentioned earlier, in Ture and Gill.
Okay. That was just something that a matchup I wanted to keep an eye on going into Saturday. East Carolina has obviously improved running the football as the season has worn on. You know, we've slowly developed some consistency there. Last week we ran for a little over 250 yards against South Florida. So that's something to keep an eye on going into Saturday for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you guys have two really solid running backs in Harris and Mitchell. And Mitchell might be the fastest guy in all of football. I remember seeing that run he had against, or that screen pass he took out of the backfield, I think it was against App State in the opening game of the year. And he just took off. And, I mean, he burned the defense. And it was just like, wow, this guy's fast. Yeah. And that's a worry for Temple because – you know, they just haven't done well at stopping the run this year. I think they're bottom five in the nation right now in defending the run. So not that Temple tough defense that you think of when you hear of Temple, you know, and their success that they had under Rule and Collins. It was all about stopping the run and let teams beat you through the air. And now seemingly it's just teams can run at will on them.
Yeah. And I think that's the key matchup when you look at this game. I think, you know, when you look at East Carolina, Mike Houston, he wants to run the football. That's his DNA. You know, he will. I'll give Coach Houston credit. He will stick to the running game no matter what. If you have a terrible first half running the ball, he will stick with it in the second half. He's determined to run it, and you started to see our identity change over the last few years. And I think specifically against a 3-3-5 defense, a true three-man front, I think a strong running game is really the way to attack it. That's and you saw Gus Malzahn last week at UCF. That was clearly his what he was trying to do early in that game. He was trying to get Bowser going and really establish the running game and then start to hit some play action over the top and stretch the field a little bit. So as I see it, I think that's the key matchup in this game. How effectively can Temple stop East Carolina's running game? And then conversely, how effectively can we run it?
I totally agree with you. And, you know, that is the way to attack a 3-3-5 because, you know, these safeties are playing 10, 15 yards back on the field. And by the time, you know, they come up to make a tackle because, frankly, Temple's front six, front seven, whatever you want to call it, hasn't been able to shed blocks and make tackles this year. You know, they're getting 5-6 yards of carry right now. So I think that when you can do that effectively and Temple doesn't make a good read on the play, I think that they're going to see a lot of success there.
Ryan, talk about the Temple special teams. Last year, you know, Tyler Snead took one to the house on a kickoff. This year, you know, looking at things, Temple seems to have a solid punter. And then also, place kicker has been, I think, perfect from 40 yards and in, but then has struggled beyond 40, very similar to East Carolina kicker Owen Daffer, who is, I think, 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 11 inside 40 yards, but has missed his only two attempts beyond 40.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the biggest gripes from the fan base from last year was the special teams play was atrocious. And statistically under Rod Carey, it has been very poor. But this year, you know, they had done a better job of flipping the field with Adam Berry, like you mentioned, who is, I think right now, fourth in the American in punting or yards per punt, averaging just over 42 yards per punt. So pretty good numbers from him this year. And Rory Bell has kind of sort of come on and become Temple's first real reliable kicker since Aaron Boumeri left a couple years back, and since he underwent hip surgery actually, and he's sort of picked it up, and like you said, he's perfect on extra points. He hit a career long of 55 in that Cincinnati game, which nobody thought he was going to even have a chance at, but like you said, anything under 40, he's money on, but 40 and above, it's sort of inconsistent. He's 2 of 5 right now from 40 plus. So not the best range for a kicker, but he's been solid from when the Owls get a chance to do it. But he just, like I said, hasn't gotten a real chance to kick a lot. Because Temple's been down in games a lot, and at that point they're just going for it on fourth down, trying to get back in a game and trying to convert and hopefully end up scoring a touchdown. But when he has been on, he's been pretty solid, and their kick coverage and punt coverage, I think, has been much better than the last couple seasons. Last year, you know, that they had gotten beat pretty bad, field position wise, and giving up long kick returns, and the fans were furious about that, because, you know, Temple back in the Matt Rhule era especially, they were known for being one of the best special teams units in the country. You know, they seemed like every week they had a blocked kick, seemed like every week they were forcing opponents to start inside their own 20. And, you know, a lot of people credit that to Ed Foley, who now is with Matt with the Carolina Panthers, and people were very upset to see him go once Rod took over and forego, you know, staying at Temple to go to Baylor to join Matt at the time and eventually to the NFL. But, you know, they just haven't seemed to figure it out. And I think up until 2 weeks ago, Temple was actually rated 31st in S&P rankings on special teams efficiency. And I think now they'd, over the last 2 weeks, they've dropped to 73rd. And I think that's just really funny how much there's fluctuation in those numbers and all. So I'm not sure the analytics of that. I don't get paid to do analytics of special teams, and I'm not sure what all goes into it, but at least there's been, if there's a bright spot on this Temple team, it seems that special teams has sort of figured out this year, and they haven't given up a return. So they've kind of figured it out, and they've been the bright spot, I guess you could say, of the Owls season.
I mentioned Tyler Snead in the return game for East Carolina. Talk about the return game for the Owls.
Yeah, you know, the kick return game at times, they've been kind of one block away from returning for a touchdown a couple times. And I think last week they replaced Devin Fox, who had been the return man since the opener, with Ahmad Anderson, who, like I mentioned earlier, he had a couple muff punts this year, but that dude, when he gets a ball in his hands, he's wicked fast, and he makes guys miss. Sometimes he does a little too much dancing, but he's had two or three that I can remember where he was one block away from taking it to the house. So, you know, I think he's a very solid return man. I think he's now handling full-time punt duties since the Jaden Blue muff at Cincinnati. Again, I think that's where the return game has not been good. They just haven't been able to return punts well. They've not fielded punts well. They have 3 muffs this year, and they just seem to, once they get the ball in their hands, they want to go sideline to sideline instead of just, you know, making that one guy miss and then cut and go upfield. They're just too busy going horizontal, and it's kind of hurt them in that regard. But then again, they also haven't had a lot of chances to return punts due to the fact that teams have just been scoring on at will on them.
The few plays I've seen of Temple this year, I've not seen any of the return games. So just out of curiosity, because this is something we've talked about here recently, East Carolina goes with a single kickoff return man and Tyler Snead. Does Temple put one or two guys deep?
They put two. They put at the beginning of the year, it was Devin Fox and Cadis Reams. Now, like I said, I think it's Anderson and Reams back there.
Hey, Ryan, something I wanted to ask you about. You know, there's a few teams, college football teams, when I look around the country that, you know, it kind of drives me nuts that they don't have an on-campus stadium. So hopefully this isn't a sore subject.
All right, let's get into it. This will be interesting. Yeah.
So there's a few that jump out in particular. I think the biggest one that drives me nuts is Pitt. Because Pitt, back in their heyday, they used to have an on-campus stadium. They were a top program in the country. Mm-hmm. They got away from it. A few more that I look at. I look at USF playing in Tampa at the Buccaneer Stadium. Here in my home state, UConn plays football off campus, about a half hour away from their campus. And then you have Temple, who I personally would love to see at some point have an on-campus stadium. I think it would be really good for the city. I think it would be good for the students. Tell me about that. What's the thought process? Is that something that might happen here in the near future?
Well, it might be great for the city, but the city doesn't think it'll be great for it. That's the problem right now. So when I was going back to when I was a student at Temple a couple years back, you know, there was the talk and the stirrings that an on-campus stadium was in the works, and it got as far as, you know, there were renderings released of the stadium. They seemed to have the funding from donors to build it. They presented the project to the city, and the city shut it down. They said, no, we don't want another stadium in city limits. And they did not want to have to deal with the ramifications of, you know, the community. The community was very outspoken at not wanting the stadium to be right next to, you know, a bunch of row houses and in the North Philly neighborhood, because they were afraid of gentrification and you know, the cost of living rising in North Philadelphia, which obviously is already a, you know, lower economic socioeconomic region of the city. So that was the main concern. And there was, you know, students that were very opposed to it as well. And I never understood the student argument from that, other than, you know, maybe they were riding the coattails of the community. And I totally, you know, respect that, you know, opinion. But I didn't get why the students were so opposed to that as much as the community members themselves. And that's where I was a little confused with it. But, you know, now that Temple has had a couple years to mull it over, and it seems, you know, that obviously now they're not going to be getting a P5 invite with this newest wave of conference realignment. And it seems like that's going to be a driving factor in maybe the next wave of conference realignment is an on-campus stadium. And now there's talk that I know USF is looking at. They're in the works, and the rumblings are there for an on-campus stadium starting to break ground here, I think, within the next year. If that ends up happening, that's going to put Temple as the only team in the conference to not have an on-campus stadium. So I know there's some things in the works. I've heard as recently as a couple weeks ago that there is a new proposal in the works that they have moved the location of the on-campus stadium that they originally had planned to where a current set of dorm buildings is. So it's a little further into Temple's campus, so it might not affect the community as much. I know they've went back and redesigned some of the features of it, so it might not affect the community as much. Like I said, I think they've taken into account the parking issue that people were concerned with and the traffic patterns. So thinking now with that being the case, and you know, you just hired a new athletic director who for a long time at the University of Texas had overseen facilities and management and the fundraising for those, that they made that hire with the idea of building an on-campus stadium in mind. And I don't think that was an accident that you hire a guy who has that much experience with facilities as your new AD. So I think that that's the idea. Whether that happens now or how the city goes about approving that or talking to the university about that, that's going to be yet to be seen. But I guess the hope now is that within maybe again, 5 years, 6 years, maybe they'll have a chance at one. Cause right now, I mean, I know the Eagles are robbing the Owls. And as much as the athletic department likes to say, you know, we have a great relationship with the Eagles and they're grateful enough of letting us use the stadium and all, I know they're robbing them because Temple's not making any money on ticket sales at the link right now. And, you know, it's just nice to last week's game was the first time that they had the end zones painted all season and since 2019, actually. And it just looks so much better to have your name on the field rather than a scratched out Eagle face or scratched out Eagle letters or faded Eagle letters. And, you know, it would just, I think, also just boost attendance being that it's on campus and students don't have to roll out of bed and take a bus or the subway down to the link. Granted that it's only 7 miles and it's only a 20-minute ride, but it's still much enough of an inconvenience, I know, for some students that they just don't want to turn out to games. And last week's game against UCF, the attendance was abysmal. And it was at the level of what Temple's game was with Wagner earlier in the year, if that tells you something about the attendance problem right now in North Philly.
Oh, that was one thing that comes to mind. Ryan, is the very fact that when Matt brought that up, it's a great question, Matt, by the way. The very fact that when you look at a team like, look at Tulane, for example. Tulane played in the Superdome for years, and they have their new stadium as the last few years. And it seems like, guys, help me out, but I believe that the attendance is better there, or it seems like it is. But, of course, I know that the Superdome is so big that a decent crowd looks so small. But they look like they've done very well with their transition, thankfully, to I am a huge fan of on-campus stadiums, not knocking Temple, but I think that the Temple program deserves to have their own football stadium. I think you're exactly right. I think the Eagles, and no offense to Temple, but I don't think the Eagles care. The sad thing is the, your own people and your own backyard care. They are, it's such a pro sports town that they could care less about anything college. And the sad thing about that is, you guys have a lot of great colleges and universities in Philly. That's what makes no sense to me, is why they wouldn't be both. You can, it's not an either or conversation. It's literally a great college town, in my opinion, as far as great universities and colleges. Unfortunately, they don't get the love because everybody's so Eagles, Eagles, Eagles. And I'm not knocking the Eagles, but I've never understood that. Why? I'm glad you brought that up, Matt, because I don't understand why you wouldn't support your colleges as well. But
well, and I think the sadder part of this whole argument is the fact that the media, the big media in the city, including the Inquirer and you know, some of the major TV networks there, and this is not a knock to them, they cover Penn State more than they do the schools that are right in the city. And it's sad that that has become the narrative there, especially considering the success up until 2 years ago that Temple had built in the football program. And you know, even under Fran Dunphy, the Owls were still very competitive in basketball. And those games with Villanova and the City Six in basketball, it's a different atmosphere when you're in attendance at those games. Those games just feel meaningful regardless of them being non-conference games. They just feel that they just bring a different energy to the schedule. And it's those are the exciting games you want to get up for. But unfortunately, those media outlets are chasing, again, the P5 big money. You know, they're going to give the promotions to the schools that are winning and the ones that seem to be in the bigger conferences. And that fits the narrative for Penn State and even Rutgers at this point, since they're not that far away from Philadelphia itself. And if they get it turned around, I'll be interested to just see how much more attention Rutgers even gets in the Philly market.
Yeah, I think you made a great point, Dave, with the, I think it was Dave that mentioned the Tulane Stadium. One of the, you know, you could see the new trend in college sports is, you know, back in the day, everybody wanted to build these huge cavernous stadiums, right? Now the trend is to build a little smaller, right? And really try to have a stadium that matches your enrollment size and your fan base size. And I think Tulane did a really good job with that. They didn't go out and build a 75,000 seat stadium. It probably holds about 35 or 40,000. And it presents much better on TV. It just gives, it elevates the entire program. It's just something, you know, I would love to see that for Temple. I think, like Dave said, they deserve that. I think it would be a big hit, and hopefully it happens. And I apologize for bringing that one up, Ryan. I know it's a, a sensitive subject.
No, you're all good.
We talked about that a couple years ago, didn't we, Ryan?
Yeah, we did.
We asked you that like 2 years ago, I believe.
Yeah, and I agree. And, you know, I think I remember the early renderings for the stadium that they were planning back a couple years back was, I think, about 35,000. And I think that's a realistic goal you can set for yourself, is to have 35,000, because during Temple's successful years, you know, they were getting 25,000 in attendance at a game. And I think that number gets boosted, obviously, with being on campus. People don't have to go down to the link. They don't have to deal with traffic. They don't have to deal with the tailgating lots and all that fun stuff. The Eagles robbing the people of the park with the parking prices and whatnot of that as well. So I think all of that just gets the people more excited. And obviously with a new stadium, there's going to be just new excitement and people are going to want to come check this place out. And that's what I love about college football stadiums, is the fact that they all have their own, you know, aura about them, and they all have their own unique touches that make them unique. And I would love to see that for Temple. You know, I like you said, they've earned it. I think they should have had it done, you know, during the Matt Rhule era or even the Jeff Collins era. That should have been when the Owls were looking to open the stadium, I think. But unfortunately, it just didn't happen. And hopefully within the next couple of years, if they see some success, maybe they can. And then they can maybe play at the link for one of these big games, like when Oklahoma comes to town in a couple of years.
Very quickly, Dave, while we're on the topic of stadiums, Matt mentioned Old Pitt Stadium. Talk about a place that had some character. Old Pitt Stadium, torn down several years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I was fortunate enough to be able to attend the game there when East Carolina played the Panthers back in 1989. Pitt was ranked, coached by Mike Gottfried, who most people probably remember as the analyst on ESPN. Often that team, you know, with Ron Franklin, they called the Peach Bowl as well as several other East Carolina games. But that day at Old Pitt Stadium, the Pirates jumped out to a 21-0 lead, but unfortunately lost 47-42. And then since you brought up basketball, Ryan, we'll talk about the Owls briefly here in a moment. But I wanted to see, have you ever been to a game? I'm sure you probably have, at the Palestra.
Yeah, and that was something, you know, I kicked myself for being a student at Temple. I didn't get to attend the game at the Palestra until after I was graduated, and I kicked myself for it because I think Temple's first game there that I attended was against Penn, and it was just, that place was packed, and, you know, there's a reason they call it the Cathedral of College Hoops, and it lives up to that name. You know, it's just got that nice old school brick facade on the outside, and it does. It looks like a cathedral from the outside, and then you walk in, and it's just got that, you know, unique glass roof with the light shining in and all the banners, the old City Six stuff in the rafters. And it's just cool to see. And, you know, I love when Temple gets to play a game at the Palestra. It just brings a, you know, again, like I said, that big energy feel in these meaningful City Six games, even though it's against a team that, you know, Temple's expected to win against in like a Drexel or a LaSalle or whatnot. It just brings that extra energy to the game and makes it just feel all that more special.
No doubt about it. Well, obviously, we're going to have you back, but can you give us a sneak peek, if you will? We're talking football tonight, obviously, with a Pirate preview, with Pirates hosting Temple on Saturday at 3 o'clock. But what about the hoops, since you brought we're talking hoops. Can you give us a quick sneak peek on the expectations for the Owls this year on the hardwood?
Yeah, you know, I think very similarly to football is that if Aaron McKee doesn't win now in his third year, you know, his seat starts to get a little toasty through the winter months, and people might be calling for his head, even though he's an alum and all. And like Matt mentioned earlier, you know, it's a very passionate fan base in Philly, for lack of a better word. And they expect Temple to win because there's still that older generation who knows Temple to be a basketball first school. It's only been recently, and you know, my generation, that's more of a Temple's now a football school. The older generation still wants Temple to be the basketball program that it once was, and they want them to be competing, you know, a top 25 team and being nationally ranked every year and winning these big games and drawing bigger opponents in. So I think, like I said, if they're not winning this year, it could be ugly by the end of the year for Aaron McKee, but I see a lot of opportunity on their schedule this year. Their non-conference slate, I think, is loaded. Aside from the Big Five matchups that they have, you know, every year, and obviously with that brings them playing Villanova every year, so that's a chance for a top 25 win. You know, they get USC at home this year in a return game from 2 years ago. That's a big opportunity with the success the Trojans have had the last couple seasons. They get Vanderbilt on the road, and, you know, then obviously in the conference itself, you have teams like Houston, Memphis, SMU, Wichita, who are all seemingly going to be competing for an NCAA berth towards the end of the year. So should be a very, very interesting season for Temple. I think people expect them to be a team that's going to be competing for a postseason berth this year. They return pretty much everybody. That was a key player towards the end of last year, other than J.P. Mormon and Dre Perry, who have both since transferred. But even then, towards the end of last year, they started seeing a lot less playing time. They were grad students who, you know, unfortunately were surpassed by some of the younger guys on the floor with their talent levels. And there's just going to be a lot of the same guys back who were playing towards the end of last year. So with that, more chemistry built up, more improvement. And this is still a very young team that they have, but it's a team with some shooters and they have some really good guard play. And that was McKee's philosophy, is that he wanted to return this team to being a team like he played on back in the day for the Owls. Is they play hard-nosed defense. They're going to want to give up 50, 60 points a game, and they're going to beat you with the shooting. And that's what they are going to play. They're going to play four guards, one big, and even your big's going to be a little undersized. And your guards are very long, very athletic, similar to that Houston formula that, you know, coach down there has implemented and has seen a lot of success with in Houston. So I think maybe if not this year, next year is the expectation that a tournament is probable, but they need to do well this year just to prove that they are developing and they are on the right path under McKee.
Well, I tell you what, very excited about basketball, but Bubba, I know, let's shift gears back to football. I know you had a question for Ryan for football again.
Yeah, I know earlier we discussed it off the air. Ryan, this will be your first trip to Dowdy-Ficklin. Is that right? Or
that is true. I know you.
Okay. You'll be when are you flying out tomorrow?
I'm driving down tomorrow. I took off work. I'm gonna drive down tomorrow through the day, about 5.5 hours, and we'll see what we get into once I get down there, because I got to wait for my editor to arrive, actually, because he booked the hotel room and he didn't prepay. So I'm going to have to wait for him to get in from a flight from New York, which obviously there's not a whole lot of flights from New York to Greenville, North Carolina. So he's not getting in till about 10 o'clock. So I'm going to need some recommendations for what to do to fill my time.
Oh, we've got plenty. Uptown Greenville, guys. There's a lot to do uptown Greenville. They get mad if you say downtown Greenville, but that's what Matt Simmons and I know. And then the late 90s, early 2000s, they tried to, it's basically a great marketing pitch. They call it uptown Greenville. So if you're looking for something to do there, thank you, Richard. Absolutely. Go hang out at Sup Dogs. You'll absolutely love that. That's a corner of Fifth Street and Cotanch. Matt and I so old. It used to be called Milano's back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Old school.
Literally right there at the corner of the campus.
Okay. I'll check it out. I'm open for recommendations, and I'm sure after that long drive down, I'm going to be looking for something good to eat and possibly have a nice drink afterwards.
Well, you can do both there at Sub Dogs, but certainly if you want barbecue, we got plenty of there. And then William Grant, Sam Pitt Brewery and Chico's. William, you're absolutely right. Bubba there. Bubba, we have another Bubba. Bubba Grant, appreciate you, buddy, very much for Pitt Brewery and Chico's. Absolutely two great spots. There's a lot of places. That's the thing about Greenville. Winslow's is another great place downtown. There's so many that we could start naming, and we could be the restaurant objective, especially when it comes to Greenville. But Greenville has a lot of nice spots that we're very proud of. And to be a town over 100,000 people, it's amazing how many great restaurants we have.
Yeah, Ryan. I highly recommend Winslow's.
Winslow's, is that barbecue?
Winslow's, it's actually, they may have barbecue. I don't think they do, but it's burgers and different kinds of sandwiches. Winslow's is excellent. Good atmosphere, plenty of TVs.
Ryan, bring some of those Temple football players to Uptown Greenville with you on Friday night, all right? Take those guys out for a long night. And
get in trouble.
Yeah. Just kidding, Ryan.
Yeah, I don't know what, like I said, I don't know what the situation with some of the players are right now, but I know, like I said, there might have been some off the field stuff here with Rodgers that got him kicked off the team possibly, and with Bags, I'm not sure what actually happened there that he eventually decided to transfer as well, but that's part of the game now, obviously, with the transfer portal. And players can do so what they want with their, you know, their future and what's best for them. But yeah, you know, where did the gentleman want the cheesesteak from?
What about Jim's?
Yeah, Jim's is my personal favorite.
That's my favorite.
It's so much better than no knock on a Pat's and Geno's, but Jim's is by far my favorite. I know D'Alessandro's is very good as well. So, you know, if you once you're up in Philly, you know, there's tons of restaurants that have cheesesteaks. It's like there's a cheesesteak place on every corner. But
I think it was Jim's that waited a long line. Is that?
Oh yeah, there's always a line wrapped around the corner at Jim's.
That's where I was. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the marquee one now, I think, more so even than Pat's and Geno's.
Yeah, I had we waited a long time. Back in the 90s, we waited a long time, but I'll never forget that. You know what? It was well worth the wait. That cheesesteak was, and rightfully so, was one of the best I've ever had, because that's what you guys are known for. So.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about it. Hey, by the way, before we let you go, I know, Matt, you wanted to talk car movies, and so we got to bring in our good buddy Ryan before we let him go. And we've talked football here a little over an hour, but I know you wanted to mention some horror movies, or what was your?
Oh yeah, well that was another guy that normally is with us, Ryan. His name is Kyle. He's a huge horror movie fan, so we try to share a movie every week. That you know, especially considering it's been Halloween, you know, you start to watch all these movies on TV. But the Hell House trilogy, guys, on Amazon Prime, there's three. Awesome trilogy that's under the radar. You won't really hear much about it in the mainstream, but it's a good watch. So that's my movie recommendation for tonight, Dave.
That sounds good. I tell you, I love Amazon Prime. I spend more. I had a show prep thing on my radio show, guys. I'll tell the side story real quick. And it said that you spend up to 45 minutes on average looking for something on the streaming services. If I'm on Amazon, Hulu, all that, I am spending way too much time searching for something, because I always think there's something better. You know, like I see a movie and I'm like, oh, that one's all right, or a TV show, but there's probably something better that I could be watching with my limited time. And I found that to be true, that I spent a long time on streaming services, and I'm just up and down with the remote trying to find something. And I waste way too much time doing that, like I'll do after the show tonight. Do you have a favorite horror movie, Ryan, while we were talking horror movies?
I'm a big OG Halloween fan, the original. I love Michael Myers. Dude's a monster, literally and figuratively. You know, I like that. And I like the Chucky movies. You know, I know some people can be a little up and down on them just because it's like, he's a doll. Why don't you just like punt kick him? But you know, I just like how they flow. I just like how he finds unique ways to kill people. Not a big fan of the paranormal stuff. That stuff kind of actually freaks me out a little bit. The Annabelle movies, they're a little weird to me, a little too much. And I hate clowns. So it, not my, one of my favorite movies.
Oh man, that's good stuff, man.
It's a good movie. It's a good movie, but my mother made me watch it when I was far too young, the original one, and it traumatized me. And then the new ones obviously came out, and I'm like, well, I'll try to get over this fear. I watched them. I was able to make it through without crying, but you know, they were okay. I was just like, it's a clown. It's a killer clown. That's a shapeshifter.
Yeah, I actually like The Conjuring. The Conjuring was very good. The second one, and I actually do like Annabelle. I think those movies they scare the daylights out of me. So that's exactly what it's more. The slasher movies, you know, as much as I love Michael Myers, and I do, he's my favorite character, like if you want to say horror character of all time, they do scare me, but nothing like these psychological things, man, just like The Exorcist and stuff. That really, I want to have a nightlight or have the night light on. And I'm a grown dude. I'm like 48 years old. It still scares the daylights out of me. So that's what they're supposed to do, right? That's what horror movies are supposed to do. So
that's partially why I don't like them, because I'm like, it's a little too real. And these are based on some real stuff that actually happened. So I might want to not watch it. Knowing my luck that I sometimes have, I'm like, I'd rather avoid having some poltergeist or something invade my house and start possessing me or something. I'm like, I'll stick to the slasher films, even though they're usually pretty predictable. I still get a good, you know, good enjoyment out of those.
And by the way, our good friend Bubba Grant, his sister, you actually know who his sister is. She's an actress. She was Beth Grant. And he mentioned that she's in, I didn't realize this, Child's Play 2.
Oh, okay.
So I remember the movie, but she's been the biggest role that I remember Bubba is, Bubba Grant, that is, that she's in is the Rookie. I remember her in the Rookie. So she's been in a lot of great, she's a great actress. And hopefully, Bubba, you can give us connections. Bubba Grant, that is, you can tell our Bubba, Bubba to Bubba, we can get her on, because she's an ECU grad. And so is Bubba, I believe, Bubba Grant, and great Pirates. But certainly she's one of our favorites because, you know, I mean, who can go wrong with her? And obviously Sandra Bullock as well, you know, for as far as actors and actresses go. Great stuff there. She's I'll have to, now that you told us that, I'll have to go back and watch Child's Play 2. I do like the Chucky movie. The Chucky movies were my teenage years. I was 14. When the first one came out. So that's a perfect demo for a kid, you know, like a teenager, and the horror movies like Nightmare on. I love Freddy. Like we were talking about this before, Freddy and Jason and all that. I love that stuff. It's just not, it scares me, but not to the level of the psychological stuff. Like another one that's scary from the 60s, Rosemary's Baby. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, that's a classic. Oh my gosh. Absolutely.
Wow. That's stuff. That's a great one.
I'll tell you guys, Chucky, I'll put him on a football tee and just kick him across the room. How about that?
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen the new Chucky, the one that came out like last year or the year before. It's totally different because he's like, it's all dealing with technology, and he utilizes smartphones and stuff to his advantage, and he is able to like go through an app and start possessing other Chucky dolls through the app and all. It's totally different, and it's a little weird because it's just like, okay, we know robots are going to take over the world one day, right? And they're just showing it in advance.
Yeah, I used to love all that, and it's funny, my kids, I don't let them watch the horror movies, but I guess YouTube and different things, I've told them about it, so they're like, they name off their character. I said, people are going to think that I let you watch horror movies. I don't. And then obviously the great going to public schools where other kids are allowed to watch those movies. I told them when they get older, they can watch them. But right now they're 7 and 8 years old. You know, I just don't feel comfortable.
That's about the age I was when I watched it. So the original.
Oh, wow.
That's probably why I got a little traumatized with clowns. Never went to the circus after that point.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. Well, you can't really go to a circus now. It seems to be.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's a whole other show, as they say. Before we let you go, obviously, what are your feelings on you? Do you think Temple wins this game? What's your prediction on the – do you have a prediction or not?
Yeah. You know, I think that this is going to be – possibly Temple's most competitive game over the last month. I think that at some point, like I said earlier, that something's got to give. And I hope that this is the game that Temple, you know, actually can come out and maybe score in the first quarter, have maybe a first quarter lead, be able to execute its game plan the whole way through the game in all four quarters. But, you know, ultimately, I think the rushing attack really scares me. The inexperience along the D-line for Temple scares me. And even if that doesn't pan out for them, you know, Holton Ahlers is a very experienced quarterback, and he had a really good game against them last year in terms of efficiency. Not so, his numbers weren't as sexy as what you would think in a 28, you know, a blowout. But he did what he needed to do against Temple last year. And I just see that happening again this year, that just Temple's inexperience and lack of execution is going to catch up to them. I think earlier in the week, I gave a prediction of 38-13 or 31-13, something along those lines. So I'm going to stick with that. I could see this being a close game at halftime, but then the Pirates, like you mentioned earlier, I think they just play a solid second half. They make those defensive adjustments that they need to, and they shut down the Owls in the second half.
That's funny that you mentioned that. My score is, my prediction is Pirates 31, Temple 14. I think our defense is what really has surprised me this year. Matt and I are defensive guys. Bubba's a great quarterback, and he's like our offense. And he and Kyle are like the offensive dudes, and Matt and I are like the defensive dudes, I guess, even though Matt and Bubba played. But I'm going 31-14 Pirates. I just think the defense is going to be really, really strong. If this was, I'll be honest, if this is Matt Rhule, if this is Collins, they just really had a command of the team. I'm just not so sure. I'm not sold as much as I like Carey, and maybe that's not the right fit for Temple. I don't know, but I'm going to go 31-14. That's my gut feeling, and I'm going to go with my gut. So what about you, Matt?
I'm very close to you guys. Ironically, when I was looking at this game earlier, I figured I'd go with 38-13 Pirates. You know, what really the difference to me in this game is, again, we mentioned this earlier, but our ability to run the ball against a three-man front. And, you know, it's not just the three-man front. It's like Ryan mentioned, there's a lot of moving parts right now. There's injuries, there's transfers. It's kind of been a perfect storm recently for Temple, similarly to what we saw at East Carolina about 3 or 4 years ago. So we've been there too. But I think at the end of the day, I think it's just a little too much, and we pull away in the second half, and I'm going to say 38-13 Pirates.
All right, last but definitely not least, our good friend Bubba Rosenbaum. Dude, what do you think?
I think the Pirates win the game. I know the spread I haven't seen today, but what is it, 15.5, 16? Is it still right around that?
Yeah.
I don't know that I would touch that. I definitely think the Pirates can cover that. That's just a lot of points. And, you know, at times we've had some red zone struggles and so forth. So I do think the Pirates will probably cover. I'll say, let's see, East Carolina 37, Temple 17.
There you go. So we're all kind of in there. We'll have to see how it goes. But I'll tell you one thing right now. If East Carolina takes this game for granted, I don't think they will. This can be a nail biter. So we saw that with Charlotte, listen to me. We've been talking so much about Charlotte recently, but Charleston Southern, that's what I'm trying to say. We saw that game where the Pirates struggled. They should not have, but they did. So I tell people all the time, there's no reason in the world that the Pirates should ever take anybody for granted. Even if it's a big year that Pirates are having, you never take your opponent for granted. So if it is, it could be a tight game, or it could be where Temple pulls out the upset, you know? So that's why you play the game, and we'll see how it comes out. Ryan, before we let you go, can you promote your work? We appreciate you so much. You've always been great since the very beginning of the podcast. This guy's come on, so it means a lot to us. And enjoy your time in Greenville, and eat lots and lots and lots of barbecue, and we'll have you back on soon to tell us your recommendations that you had in Greenville.
I will be sure to do that. And then you can always follow me on Twitter at RyanWallen247. You can follow the Owls Daily Twitter account at OwlsDaily247. You can follow my editor, Sean Pastor, on Twitter at Temple Owls Daily. He's the only man in the American that goes to every home and away football and basketball game. So we got that going for us. So can say we're the most dedicated outlet covering the American teams right now. And, you know, you can always follow our content on our site at owlsdaily.com.
All right, Ryan, as always, appreciate you. Have a safe trip, and we'll see you very soon.
Sounds good. Thank you guys for having me on. I look forward to seeing the game tomorrow or on Saturday.
No doubt. All right. Great. Take care, buddy.
Great to meet you, Ryan. Thank you.
Nice meeting you. Thank you.
Night. All right. Bye-bye. Night. All right, so very grateful to have Ryan, as always, a great guy, I'll tell you what. And you brought up a great point there. We'll move along in just a second. But great question about the stadium. Ryan is one of those guys that went to Temple, and they're well-deserving of having a stadium. It makes no sense that Temple does not have a stadium on campus. That's just one of my pet peeves with college football. but I won't go. I won't ramble on about that. Want to mention too, we're not talking football here. We're talking actually baseball. Matt Semenza and Bubba Rosenbaum. The Purple Gold World Series is this weekend. Very excited about that. For Pirates, will be starting cranking up around, always around Valentine's Day, guys, as you know. But this weekend, very special, is the inter-squad scrimmage, as well, the Purple and Gold game, if you will. Purple and Gold World Series, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I know Bubba has that graphic, so I know he'll put it up on the screen in just a second. There we go. For Friday, it's 3:30. So tomorrow afternoon, if you're watching live on Thursday night, it's 3:30 Friday, 10:50 on Saturday, and then on Sunday is high noon, the ECU World Series. We're very excited about that for the Purple and Gold World Series. And good luck to – I don't know if you're going to go for purple or gold. Matt Semenza, who are you pulling for, the purple or the gold?
You know what, man? I can't even say. I just hope that – how about this? I'm going since it's all ECU. I'm just hoping for a competitive game.
There you go. Sounds good. And we definitely want that to be competitive. I don't know if we want the game Saturday to be competitive. I know we don't. So good luck to the Pirates at 3:00. And I know after the game, we have the Pirates football playback. That'll be Saturday night. And so we're very excited about that. And brought to you by, presented by L&K Custom Homes. So we appreciate their support. Kevin, KK Walker, Matt, he was back in the 80s, part of the 83 team, one of the best teams of all time. And Kevin is one of the best athletes ever I've seen. That was pre my time being in fandom of ECU before I went to ECU. But I have seen his footage, the film, if you will, one of the best players to ever put on the purple and gold, in my opinion. And not just saying that because he's a sponsor of the show, he's a friend of the show, and we'll have to have him. We need to have him back on, Bubba, because he is really good at analysis. I'll tell you one thing. He's like you, Matt, that we learned on early on in this podcast of how much you guys as former players, how passionate you are, rightfully so, for the program.
No doubt. I'd love to meet him. I know he was a great Pirate and certainly appreciate his sponsorship for the show here.
No doubt. And Bubba, I know you have something.
Yeah, this is, as far as the Purple Gold World Series, definitely on Saturday, especially with so many folks in town for the football game. Obviously, tailgate lots open up at 9 a.m. So get out there, do some early tailgating and get over to Clark LeClair Stadium, watch some baseball. I believe they're going to be playing 7 innings. Coach Godwin said you'll get to see a variety of guys. That's the excellent thing about these intra-squads. You get to see everybody in action. For the most part, you have certain guys like Carson Wisenhunt, where they're proven commodities, and due to their workload, especially with him for Team USA during the summer, he's been shut down. But a lot of these guys up and down the roster, you'll have a chance to see who may be some surprising contributors come spring of 22. Some other things about baseball, they've played UVA as well as Liberty this fall, split a series or that doubleheader on Sunday with UVA losing 12-8, winning 6-1, and then they had tied Liberty 5-5 the previous weekend. Excellent news, Ryder Giles is swinging the bat much better. Ryder was 3-for-5, I believe it was, against UVA. You also had Jake Kuchmaner pitching much better than he did in the spring of 21. Jake, of course, really struggled, but not only that performance against UVA, but throughout the fall, he has been pitching much, much better, and that's excellent to hear. Jake Kuchmaner is a key part of this roster, not only from a performance standpoint, but just he has such tremendous leadership, excellent young man. SGA and just unbelievably academically successful, and just brings so much to the table for this program. And you want to see that young man have success. So definitely get out to Clark LeClair Stadium on Saturday to get an early look at the 22 Pirates.
Speaking of which, Bubba, I'm glad you mentioned about Saturday, because that Saturday game, as you mentioned, is 10:50. Folks, there was a question about parking, and if you are an ECU baseball fan, which we all are, just keep in mind that's for tailgating for football. So you're going to have to park somewhere else if you don't have, you know, maybe obviously if you have a space right there at Clark LeClaire. But there was a question about that, Bubba, I saw on social media. So I wanted to address that tonight. I'm glad you mentioned about the, obviously, to promote the Purple Gold World Series. But please make sure that if you don't have a spot there, you cannot just park there. Probably everybody watching right now or listens to the podcast knows that. But I just want to put that out there. That I would hate for one of our Pirate fans to unfortunately have their car towed while they're watching the Pirates play baseball. So just keep that in mind on Saturday.
So you're just talking about they're adjacent to the stadium. Yeah, and the tailgate lots open at 9. So,
right.
You know, unless someone's getting there super early, I don't even think that I'm sure there'll be event staff there that won't even allow them into that lot. So,
yeah,
where they wouldn't have the opportunity to put themselves in a bad situation to be at risk for being towed. But yeah, definitely allow yourself enough time if you don't have a parking pass for that general area to park and walk to get to the stadium.
Or you can just give more money to the Pirate Club and have and have that be one of your spots, no doubt. Guys, I'm so excited. I'm very fired up. I'm going to go around the horn one more time before we get out of here. Matt, do you have anything before we go?
You know, I think we covered it all. I just I feel very confident this week in the Pirates getting a win. This is a huge game. This gets us above 500. You know, to the 5-win mark, and it keeps us on our path to becoming bowl eligible. So we need to take care of business this week. Absolutely no excuses. This is a game we need to have at home. What I'm really hoping for, guys, is that the Pirate fans turn out in huge numbers. Everything is in front of us. You know, it's different than it was last year, right? You know, the product on the field is better. We have a defense that's flying around. We're on a path to be bowl eligible, so there's really no excuses. 3 o'clock game at home. What else can you be doing? You know, if exactly. You live in Greenville, North Carolina, go to the game. So I'm just hoping that the fans turn out, and you know, just looking forward to another big win.
Or if you're in Connecticut, you could actually drive down and see the game. I don't know who that would be, but
I'll fly. Okay. There's not gonna be a 14-hour drive. Too far, man.
Yeah, less tolls that way too. That you have to like scramble around for the change. I tell you what, before we go, I just want to say that this team is getting better. Very excited. And, you know, it sounds such a cliche, but how you're playing in November, I mean, this team, I think, is going to get better, which is scary. And this month, that's my early prediction. We'll see how it turns out on Saturday. Another thing is, let's see the student section. Those of you in the Boneyard, it was 10,200. Let's see if we can break the record this week. Bubba, what was that in 2016? Help me out. You're the numbers guy. I believe it was the Western Carolina game was the record of all time at the Boneyard. Let's see if we can beat. I challenge. We have great fans. We have great students. Let's that student section, let's have that rocking, living on a prayer. Let's sing it as loud as you can and the fight song and the whole nine yards. But, Bubba, help me out on that before we go.
I'm trying to remember the exact number, if it was low 11s. But, it was, like you said, it was 10,200 or so for the for the game against South Florida last Thursday. And I just wanted to kind of expound upon what Matt's saying. There's absolutely no excuses, Pirate Nation. You've been wanting winning football. The Pirates are playing winning football. They've won 6 out of their last 10 games, going back to the last 2 games of last season. They've had a chance to win all of those games that they've lost, with the exception of 1. So get out to Dowdy Ficklin Stadium and do your part to support the Pirates, and let's get this thing to 5-4 headed to Memphis.
Yeah, I've had people, by the way, I'm glad you said that, Bubba and Matt. I'll say one quick thing. We'll get out of here running long. But I've had people say they're Pirate fans that, you know, oh, I'll go to the Cincinnati game. Why would you not go to the Temple game? Okay, we know Cincinnati's number 2 in the nation right now. And all that, maybe playoff hopes, and there's a lot of things that can happen between now and then for the Pirates too. But go to the Temple game, because we only have 2 more home games. And if you want the Pirates to go bowling, this is a game right here that, you hate to say, we've been saying that a lot this year, a must win. But if you want them to go bowling and you want to be for them to have extra practices and for us to have another mini vacation before Christmas or after Christmas, then show up Saturday. It's that important. 1-800-DOWL-ECU. ecupirates.com, right, guys?
Yep, and one thing that I failed to mention, I do want to point this out with it being Military Appreciation Day, social media. I know I shared this in the group text. I'm sure you guys may have had a chance to watch it, but there's a gentleman in Greenville, a World War II veteran. It's hard to believe, but he's lived there 70 years, 96 years old, has never been to an East Carolina football game at Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium. So Coach Houston called the gentleman, and the university's providing tickets, to Town Bank Tower. He accepted the offer. It's going to be awesome to see that Military Appreciation Day and that gentleman at the game on Saturday. It was something I couldn't watch it without getting emotional.
No doubt about it. My grandfather served in World War II, and we have Veterans Day coming up in a week, literally a week from today. No excuse for us not to. Everybody should be patriotic and supporting our military, no doubt about it. And guys, also one more emotional thing is Ruffin McNeil. I know he can't be there Saturday, but he's getting inducted into the ECU Hall of Fame Friday night. It's Hall of Fame weekend, so there's a lot of great Pirates that are going into the Hall. Well-deserved honor. But when it talks to football, we're talking football. Love that guy being from Lumberton, North Carolina. Huge star as a player. Huge star as a coach. All the contributions he's done for East Carolina. A huge cheerleader for East Carolina. And coach loves our show. So that means a lot to us too. But coach, I know you listen and watch when you can. Appreciate you so much. And thank you. I tell him every time, but thank you for all that you've done for ECU football. Just like Matt Semenza, thanks to you too, my friend, for all the wins you helped out for. There's a lot of guys like you that came before the folks now that they don't realize that you paved the way for what is Pirate football. And we're starting to see that. So
thank you, Dave. Thank you. And I also want to give a shout out to Coach Ruff because, wow. I mean, you talk about somebody who really deserves that. He was a fantastic player here. He was a great ambassador for the university and certainly did some great things as a coach here. So I'm excited for him and his family to have that opportunity, and really excited too about the gentleman, the World War II veteran. That's a pretty amazing story. America's Greatest Generation, they call it. And they definitely deserve, all the praise you could possibly give them. So that's another great story.
We can never say enough and never thank them enough for all that they did. Think about surviving the Great Depression and World War II. Like, one of those would be a huge feat, but you survived two in a short period of time. Unbelievable. You'll never hear me say anything bad about that group. I'll tell you that right now. All right, guys, appreciate Ryan Walling for him coming on tonight. We'll see how things go. And obviously, we have our Pirate football playback on most likely, Bubba, Saturday night. We'll see about that. Or if it's on Sunday, we'll let everybody know the exact time. But we appreciate that. And it might be a airplane game, as we call it. Not this week, but actually I meant to say not this week, but next week. Certainly it's a home game. But got that kind of feel to it, a big game where people are going, all right, hope everybody has a great night. And Bubba, do you have anything else?
No.
All right, let's get out of here, guys. Thank you so much for watching. Listen to the Pirate Preview. Pirate Preview right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. Good Pirates.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Udon Cheek, assistant track and field coach at East Carolina University. You are plugged into the Sports Objective podcast. If you are a fan, you are plugged into the right place. And if you're really a fan, you will share that link. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. Boom!